Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Hello and welcome to Seminary Explores. My name is Kristen Johnston-Largen and I'm our host today. And I'm very happy to have with me as our guest, the Reverend Yehiel Curry, who is the pastor of Shekinah Chapel Lutheran Church. Welcome, Yehiel.
Thank you for having me.
Yehiel is our minister in residence. Those of you who are our alums know that once a year we have someone come from on the outside, often somebody who's serving in an interesting or different ministry context to be with the students and the faculty and, talk with us about the perspective of church from where you are. And we just came from lunch, and so we had a very interesting conversation, and so I'm excited to talk a little bit more about all that with you and share that with our listeners today.
Yes. Great lunch, I might add.
Very good. Well, why don't you first of all talk about how you came to the ministry and a little bit of your background and,
Yeah, my involvement in the ELCA is not a traditional one. I was teaching sixth grade at a Chicago public school. My background is in psychology and education, so I did quite a bit of work in social services as well as education. And I found out about a program that apparently the ELCA had started called Simba Camp. Simba stands for Safe in My Brother's Arms.
Oh, nice.
As I understand it, after the L.A. riots in 92 that involved Rodney King, some of the men and women of the ELCA of African-American descent just felt like they could do more in their congregations and their context with providing some leadership and direction. And this rites of passage camp was born called Simba. And for many years, Simba was just having a camp. And young men from various cities, from New York and from Los Angeles and Detroit, would all come together and convene in Chicago and travel to a camp. After 2 years of camping, a worship service called Shekinah Chapel was started as a way of adding to the lives of the young men. So it wouldn't be just something that's annual, but how can we do something every week? So with those participants from Chicago, a worship service was started on the south side of Chicago out of a local Lutheran congregation. I joined 2 years after they started these monthly worship services. So the monthly worship services was in 95. Mm-hmm. I joined in 97. And when I joined, we were worshiping first and third Saturdays. Mm-hmm. I was a teacher. I was interested in mentoring young men. While I was attending these worship services, there was also hair cutting and real men talk and potluck and so just really got immersed in the community.
Mm-hmm. What I just wanted to ask you, what made this attractive to the young men who came? Why did they come?
It was an opportunity. I think it was men saying, we want to take you to camp and invest in you.
Okay.
Simba is really interesting because we have adult men between the age of 18 and 35 who serve as counselors, but then we have another group that we call our elders, which are 55 and older.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what made it attractive.
Yeah. Okay. Is that camp still going on?
Still going right now. We worship at Waypost Lutheran Camp. And that's in Hatley, Wisconsin.
Okay.
In addition to the Simba camp, we've added on two more camps. One is called Simsa, Safe in My Sister's Arms.
Oh, okay.
Which is also there. And our newest camp, which is called Mila, Multicultural Youth Leadership Academy, which is in New Era, Michigan.
Okay. What happens at camp?
So we have a rites of passage model, which is we set a curriculum, goals for the camp, things that we want the kids to learn. It's an opportunity for them to have fun, but also leadership skills. Mm-hmm. Rites of passage forces you to deal with some stuff on the inside in order to go to the next level in your life. So a lot of discussion about anger, disappointment, forgiveness, survival. And so we prepare curriculum each year, and look at it as a boys camp, a Boy Scout or Girl Scout. Where yeah. every year you complete, you get a badge.
Yeah,
so every
okay.
year the curriculum changes, and yeah. it's an opportunity for someone to say that they conquered that year of camp.
Yeah, very nice. Anyway, so you were saying that then the chapel grew out of that camp.
Yeah, so this camping experience produced a church, a worship service called Shekinah Chapel. Mm-hmm. And I got to be honest, I'm not sure people thought at that moment that we were going to grow this into a church. It was an opportunity to service some youth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 5, 6, 7 years later, it continued to grow. In 2005, the leader of the of this worship experience ended up leaving the OCA, and we lost about 90% of our membership. But the congregation asked me, and we weren't a congregation at that time, we were just a worship experience, asked me to lead. And in about 6 months, we had gone from about 15 people gathering on a Sunday to 100. So at this time, we were worshiping every Sunday at 5 p.m.
Okay.
Our Senate office approached us and said, hey, now's the time to start look at becoming a congregation under development. And they asked me to be the lay mission developer.
Mm-hmm.
After saying no for about 6 months.
The Spirit wore you down.
Yes. So I finally said yes and started a teen program at Lutheran School of Theology in 2006. Mm-hmm. Was ordained in 2009. After my ordination, I went back to seminary and got the MDiv. Mm-hmm. And completed that work in 2013. And the congregation, Shekinah Chapel, was officially organized in 2012.
Yeah. What has that meant for you to be an organized, you know, or you're putting that in quotes, right? How has that been important? How has that sort of changed the community? What, tell me a little bit about that. And did you all have to kind of make a decision? Do we really want to do this or not? I mean, I imagine that was a big step.
Yeah, that's very, so when you're leading a new congregation and 95% is African American, and you do your travels and people come in, you realize there's a lot about how we worship that's different.
Yeah.
So as a congregation, we had to ask the question, is this something we want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Our services is different. It's more contemporary. It's more emergent style of worship.
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely ascribe to Lutheran theology and identify as Lutherans as part of the ELCA.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a little bit easier than what I thought. It was a resounding yes in 2006.
Yeah, really?
And started going through that process of becoming a member. So whenever you officially become a member of anything, any organization, any process, there's this sense of jubilation that we made it through, that
yeah.
somebody like myself who was just sitting on the pew and trying to do my part as a resident of Chicago was just trying to be a mentor, got called into ministry,
yeah.
and ended up being the mission developer. So
yeah,
it's something we're pretty proud of and excited about.
Yeah, yeah. Talk a little bit about your services.
Yeah, so our worship service, it's going to start off high energy. Our gathering time is typically three contemporary gospel songs mm-hmm. that people in our community, in our context, are pretty familiar with.
Okay.
And that's how we start each and every worship service. Then we open up with prayer. One of the last things we do is the preaching of the word.
Okay.
It was important. In our community, we've taken over a building
mm-hmm.
Where White Flight happened. It was a Lutheran church that was established there in 1908.
Wow.
And so as the community changed, mm-hmm. the church died.
Yeah.
And so when we first opened up, the names were still on the church, and we were having difficulty getting people from the community in.
Yeah.
But after we started listening and talking, we understood that there was this disconnect with invitation. The worship was different. There was a lot that was different.
Okay.
And so what we started to do was to make sure our worship, just from a liturgy point of view, was consistent with most of the worship they had been experiencing in the community.
Yeah.
And so everywhere else, preaching was the last thing.
Okay.
So we yep. adopted that model.
Mm-hmm.
We're still a community that still has community once a month. We do it on first Sundays.
Okay.
Along with the other congregations in our city, in our area. And that wasn't difficult because you got to remember I spent 4 years in the education process and I wasn't ordained.
Yeah.
And so this whole notion of having someone come in and do communion was very difficult. And so we settled on once a month during my time as
sure.
a mission developer.
Okay.
And so we just continued it after I was ordained. It's something that serves as a key marker for the community that, hey, this is something that I'm used to. Another unique attribute to our service, one would be libations.
Okay.
It's something we do about once a month. And libations, I like to relate to our All Saints Day.
A good day to be doing that.
Yeah. So it is our way of acknowledging those who came before us
mm-hmm.
and being grateful for those lives and experiences that we've been able to share. We also bring the arts into our worship experience. We have a youth liturgical dance ministry and an adult liturgical dance ministry.
Nice.
The Bible is always talking about joyful dancing.
Yeah,
and so
right.
we bring that into the community. Poetry happens twice a month. And we have our resident poet who is in the church. And typically it's either based on a gospel lesson or a spiritual experience. There's poetry that is offered. And so, yeah, that's kind of some of the unique things we do at Shekinah.
Yeah. And you talked about when we were talking earlier, you said, I think if I'm quoting you right, people were coming not because of what was happening sort of inside, but also kind of the way in which the community is focused or the congregation is focused on the community. Is that also a big part of how you see yourselves in your ministry?
Absolutely. It's always an outward focus. I came to this ministry because of the work they were doing with young men for mentoring.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was never a worship service.
Okay.
From my experience, what I found, the people who come to Shekinah don't want to join a denomination. They want to join a ministry.
Yeah.
They mm-hmm. want to join something that mm-hmm. speaks to their lives, that's speaking to their current situation. So those with children, like our Sunday school, that we do an hour before service.
Mm-hmm.
Those who like the arts, their children are participating in our liturgical dance program. Those who enter service, we do a produce mobile where 10,000 pounds of produce is passed out once a month because we're in a food desert.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We need 30 volunteers every month for that to happen, and half of them are people who live in the community, might identify as being a member of the church, but we see them on produce mobile days, but not on Sunday.
Okay.
And so it's always
yeah.
been a outward piece for us. It's,
yeah.
it's what we do outside the four walls that I think that draws people in. I have a saying, we try to make friends before we make converts.
Yeah, nice.
Try to make it easy to get in and hard to get out.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I find that really provocative and challenging in the best way to think about people come join a ministry, not a denomination, or they're attracted to a ministry. They want to be a part of a ministry, not a denomination. And I think, you know, on the one hand, as somebody who loves the Lutheran Church, raised in the Lutheran Church, right, all of the things with the Lutheran Church, I sort of think, I love my denomination. But then I have to check myself, right? Well, what do you mean when you love your denomination? What are you saying about that? And what does that really mean and look like? And I really appreciate, and I want to ask you to elaborate on a little bit, you know, when you were talking about, so the question that comes from traditional white Lutherans, right? Well, how are you Lutheran, right? And how you understand that. And as a theologian, you warmed my heart because I thought you articulated that very well, and a reminder to me of what I really mean when I say I love the Lutheran Church. So I wonder if you might just elaborate on that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a question that I have to answer a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
People come into the worship service and sometimes they say, well, how is this Lutheran?
Mm-hmm.
And I always remember one of our members, Rahel Matula Williams, who is from Tanzania, who's third generation Lutheran, who always say, I should be asking you that question.
Right.
As we look at how Lutheranism has grown in the continent of Africa, there is a positioning that says that for some of us, it's not a new thing, right? And so it's all contextual.
Right.
So here in the U.S., it's more of a contextual piece. So I identify with my Lutheranness is directly related to our Lutheran theology, our theology of the cross, the means of grace. Mm-hmm. And I said to you that if you take the Lutheran word off, and many African-American congregations in Chicago that I'm affiliated with, our theology is seen as liberation theology.
That's
now,
right.
I know that word is contested here and there, but I need you to know that how we preach and what we believe about the cross and how the means of grace is used in this church is very consistent.
Yeah.
With the type of preaching I've been under and lived under, the cadence may be different.
Yeah.
But that's our way of bringing our culture to the table.
Yep.
There may be arts and libations, but that's the way we bring culture into our denomination. And so when I say we join a ministry, I like for you to have a mindset of that one ministry you're involved in where everybody knows each other's name and you're really connected. And so it's easy to quit on a denomination, but it's really hard to quit on a friend.
Yeah.
So in those ministries, you develop friends, and it's really difficult to quit on a friend.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm relating it to, that those ministry opportunities are where we build our friendships.
Yep.
Sometimes you could be part of a denomination and go into a building and not know anyone.
That's right.
And that's been my experience.
Well, and again, I mean, obviously, we had said this before as a Lutheran theologian, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's a reminder, to me that there's nothing wrong. I mean, like, there's nothing wrong with loving your cultural heritage, loving your national heritage. But that's not what it means to be Lutheran,
exactly.
Right? And the liberative core, that's also the liberative core of the gospel, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, to be able to live that out in a variety of ways and ways that resonate with people and really invite them in and make them feel at home and inspire them to do the good work of the gospel in the world. I think that's just so important. And so it's great to see that work that's going on there. That's fabulous.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So what's next, or are you happy with where things are? Do you have a vision for where you'd like the chapel to grow? Is there transformations ahead, or how do you think about the next 5 years for you, your own ministry and the ministry of the congregation?
Yeah, that's a great question. As I feel like, having now really been there serving for 10 years, that question of like, are we going to try and do this for another 10 years, or what's ahead? For me, at Shekinah Chapel, because of the way I started, leadership development has always been the key.
Yeah.
So in order for me to go through school for that period of time, I'm somebody who's been married 21 years. I got 3 daughters. So my entire time in ministry, I've been married with children and trying to go to school. So it involved a lot of leadership development. We spent a lot of time and energy on that. Youth development and leadership development. We separate the two. Our motto at the church is to bring them in, train them up, and ship them out.
Could be our model here too.
Right. So I believe we're in the ship them out phase.
Okay.
My daughter is in Rwanda. We have a lot of our young adults who are taking advantage of opportunities with the ELCA. One traveled with the AIDS delegation to South Africa. We have others who are involved in youth ministry network, and some who have participated in the youth gathering. And so we're at this phase in which where some of our leaders are now going out, which is
great.
The evangelism starts.
Yeah.
And so trying to do more work around sending out.
Yeah.
And so that we can experience this wonderful church of ours in various contexts and capacities. And so that's what I think is next for me.
Yeah.
The immediately next is enjoying 3 weeks of vacation, but 2 of those weeks I'll be spending in Liberia. So I leave in a week.
Oh, wow. And
we'll spend 2 weeks in Liberia with the Bishop Jensen Sinkulo and doing some work in Totata with some pastors around African-American preaching and how it intersects with African national preaching. So excited about that opportunity.
Oh, that'll be just wonderful. How'd you make that connection?
So my daughter is really great friends with the Sinculos daughter.
Yeah.
And we were also in the same conference in Chicago. Jensen sat on my theological review panel. My internship was at the church that he used to pastor in Chicago.
Nice.
St. Mark Lutheran Church. And his wife, Linda Sinculo, and myself has always been great colleagues. And so an opportunity came up, and I got a call from someone in Global Missions, Dr. Andrea Walker, and she asked me if I'd be interested. And I said, yes, I know the Sinculos. It'd be a wonderful opportunity to go and talk about preaching.
That's great. Do they have a seminary in Liberia? Or
they do.
Okay.
They do.
Okay.
And so we'll be at the seminary there and doing some work.
Oh, that's going to be fabulous.
Yep.
How is the neighborhood that where your church is in Chicago? Has that changed in the time that you've been there? Is it still a lot of the same issues? Are you finding it's a tragedy, I guess is what I want to say, that you know, you talked about all of this sort of starting with the riots with Rodney King in 92, and it sort of feels like we've come all this way and we haven't come anywhere at all, right?
Yep,
so
yep.
I don't know if for you it still feels like you're dealing with the same issues that when you started with, or if things are a little bit different. How have you?
Yeah, we definitely have a lot of great stories of where success has happened through the youth we've mentored. As it relates to the church and the community, I pastor Shekinah Chapel, which is in a community called Riverdale, which is three blocks south of the Chicago border.
Okay.
So really, really close.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s, Riverdale was a factory town. So when the factories left, then businesses left and transportation left and stores left. And so unfortunately today, we identify ourselves as a poverty community.
Okay.
The average income in the community where I pastor is $30,000 per household.
Wow.
We got about 48% of the population is 18 and younger.
Mm-hmm.
We got another 40% that are seniors, which tells us that majority of the adults are caring for their grandchildren.
Wow.
And so that's the community we have. And we're landlocked on three sides to rail yards. So the bottom line is there's a need for the church there.
Yeah.
But we have to understand that if God is calling us to Riverdale, then God is in many ways calling us to ministry of poverty or to those who are in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And we're okay with that.
Yeah.
The resources aren't there. They're kind of locked into the community if they don't have a vehicle. And that's where we're called to serve. That's what we call home. And so we wish the conditions were a little bit better. But this is one community that hasn't picked up after the downturn of our economy recently.
Yep.
A lot of apartment buildings, a lot of rentals. But there's still a lot of hope in Riverdale. There's still a lot of smiling faces in Riverdale. We hope that we're part of the reason that people are feeling a little bit optimistic. But we really have toyed with the thought of, should we be moving? But we like being in Riverdale. That's where we're called to be.
Yeah, yeah. Reminds me when you were saying that about the same, you know, one of the things that Pope Francis had said was, you know, the church is called to be a poor church. I mean, be with people where they are and meet them where they are and minister to them where they are. And it sounds like you all are doing a really great job of that.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, we are come to the end of our time. It always goes really quickly. And I just want to thank you so much for our conversation and blessings to you on all the good work that you do, and I certainly hope our paths cross again.
Thank you.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from Historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.